are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Friday edition. And as expected, early this morning, collectivism had a victory party. What am I talking about? Yes, the Senate and then the House passed a budget-busting bill. If you have any doubts that these two parties, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, are big government parties, you should have none now. Now, I'm not going to revisit Senator Paul's attempt to really shame, and they really, this behavior is shameful. It's irresponsible and shameful. He gave it the old college try. At least he tried. But trying is not winning. Who won this morning? The advocates of bigger and bigger government of both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. And I'll give another plug because I had some time to check this. I went to Conservative Review. And I did it because my senator, well, one, let me back up. Senator Cornyn is a hopeless. He's one of these phony conservatives. He should be challenged. And I hope somebody takes him on that's listening. But I was disappointed as well in Senator Cruz because he is, according to Conservative Review, still an A on the scorecard. I think he's 90 or 92%, something like that. Now, I know why he did it. Many of you probably don't. What happened when President Obama was president? Defense spending was drastically cut. And they also put in a limit on increases in spending that hurt in the terms of discretionary spending, hit the Defense Department the most. Now, if you listen to the show, you know I'm for a strong national defense. We need, and that's the primary function of government, is to defend the people in the nation against foreign adversaries, rivals, people that don't wish us well. I'm definitely for a strong national defense. And it also includes expenditures for intelligence gathering by the National Security Council and the Central Intelligence Agency. But the situation is this. We no longer have an American republic. We have an American empire. And that empire has been in existence for all practical purposes after World War II. And it's gotten bigger and bigger. And that means not only do we have several hundred military bases. Now, many of them are small. I understand that. But 30 to 40 of them are very large. We still have troops in Okinawa, Marines, Army, Air Force, Navy. Yes, we're still in South Korea, Germany, Italy. We're still there. All of those countries are what I would consider economically developed countries. They can stand on their two feet. They have the economic wherewithal to have a military to defend their own nation against their own adversaries. And I agreed with Senator Paul. A matter of fact, I said it the day before he said it, that, yeah, I'm for having a parade all across the country for our military soldiers when we bring them home, finally bring them home, especially from Afghanistan. The American people no longer support an interventionist foreign policy where every few years or sooner your sons, your daughters are sent to intervene in country after country, and many of these, the people there deeply resent us. Oh, initially they might applaud But when 6 months in a year, they consider us occupiers, and they deeply resent us. And some of them become our sworn enemies. It's time to bring our American sons and daughters that are serving voluntarily in the military home from around the world. We need to defend the United States from all nations that don't mean as well. But that doesn't mean year in, year out, we're not only overseas, but intervening in another country. Why, it might have made sense in some periods to have alliances, and what I'm thinking of is the oil that Saudi Arabia, Iran. Remember, we were once allies with Iran, but what did we do? We had the CIA overthrow a government and put in the Shah, and then only several decades later, the people of Iran overthrew him. And we did defend Saudi Arabia and Iran. But remember, what happened in the 70s? We had spikes up in oil, the thanks we got from both of these countries, especially Iran, with the Shah. Oh, yes, they buy a lot of military equipment. I understand that. When I was in the Air Force, I was on the F-15 program as both a negotiator and financial manager, the aircraft part. And when I was in industry for a period of time, I was on the F-16 program, matter of fact, international program. So we are the supplier of arms, whether it be aircraft, tanks, artillery, and our allies buy a lot, not all, but buy a lot of our equipment, foreign military sales. I haven't looked at the exact numbers recently, but in terms of total military spending for the entire world now here, U.S. military spending is right around half, slightly less than half. And in all the other countries are the other half. And yes, we have serious challenges from who? China, Russia, the Islamic Republic of Iran are the big three. There are others, North Korea being another one. But look at their military spending. It's a fraction of ours. As a matter of fact, you would have to add typically 7 to 10 countries to match ours. We have become a military, industrial, congressional complex, MIC. And why I favored significant increases in military spending to offset the drastic cuts in the Obama administration. This budget, in essence, gives the military exactly what it wants. And that means it maintains the American empire. But it also gave away the farm in terms of domestic spending, especially for welfare programs that the Democratic Party wanted. That was the horse trade. And that's why the deficits for the next 2 years will be over $1,000 billion, which is over $1 trillion. And I always need to remind people, $1 million is a one followed by six zeros. $1 billion is $1,000 million, which is a one followed by nine zeros. And $1 trillion is $1,000 billion. That's why I call it a budget-busting bill of the establishment, the political elitist establishment of both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. The vote in the Senate was 71 in favor of this. Those 71, check it, and if one of your senators voted for him, consider challenging him in a primary. And let me get back to Senator Cruz. I didn't vote for Senator Cruz, but he was my third or fourth choice for president ahead of Donald Trump, but he didn't make it. Didn't surprise me. What he lacks is charisma. Oh, he's very good at debates, but he's not. He has a certain coolness, coldness, monotonous. And maybe he'll get better, maybe he won't if he runs again. I would have hoped that he would have been one of the senators supporting Senator Rand Paul. But what does Texas have? And I know it because I've worked in it. It has military, defense spending, contractors all over the state, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area for sure. So I'm sure that had a big impact on how Senator Cruz voted. What do we need? Like I said in the last show, if we keep voting Democrat and Republican, you're going to get the same results that we've gotten since the close of World War II. Bigger and bigger government. And what does that lead to? The general term is collectivism, and I prefer that term, by the way. That's what we have in the United States. Collectivism in the United States is very much a welfare state. And a welfare state inevitably leads to a socialist state, and in turn a communist state, and in turn a totalitarian state. And that's where this country is headed. And we've enabled the state to spy on us, to protect us from terrorists. But who protects the American people from the people that supposedly are protecting us? Who guards the guardians, as a philosopher Plato said? Apparently no one is. Many of these congressmen, senators, are afraid of the National Security Agency and the FBI. Why? Everything that they've said, any emails, Twitter tweets, text messages, anything that's gone over the internet or the phone systems, the National Security Agency has a copy of. And I'm not talking metadata. They have that. They have the actual phone conversation, the actual email message. And we fund this. We fund the turnkey tyranny. We enable them to set up a police state. That's exactly where we're heading. And I'll say more, because why I'm initially covering the death of the Republican Party, because I'm marking the death of the Republican Party, was this morning. Because this is not the first time that this has happened. It happened under George W. Bush. Now, I knew that George W. Bush, like his father, was not a conservative. He tried to say he was a compassionate conservative. Well, I've been in the conservative movement before George Bush was a Republican, quite frankly. And I knew he wasn't. He's a big government type, a progressive or liberal Republican. And it's hard to tell a difference today. At one time, there was a rather distinct difference. Not anymore. This country, both parties have moved further and further to the left. And now the Democratic Party is not a liberal party anymore. It's a far leftist party. Progressive, socialist, communist. That is the Democratic Party. The Republican Party, go to Conservative Review, I keep saying this. Look up your congressman, look up your senator, and see the score, and then look at the votes, how he voted. This is not someone just giving their opinion, it's based on votes. Talk is cheap. A lot of these so-called Republicans that say they're conservative, you look at the votes and you say, no way is that a conservative. Wake up, because many of you think they're still conservative, and they're not. The leadership of the Republican Party and most of the Republican Party are F and D's. Oh, there's a few C's, but most of them are F and D's. They're closer to the F's, and the F's are the Democratic Party. That's why I say nothing fundamentally is going to change until you stand up. And you, I'm talking to you, must stand up. I'm not an organizer. I certainly don't have the money to set up a party. I'm sort of an activist radio talk show host. But it's the people spontaneously in small groups across the country that first step have to reunite the Tea Party movement. But this time, don't make the mistake of being wooed by the Republican Party. Stay away from them. They will corrupt you. They will make you dependent. That's what they're about. What is big government about? I listen to a lot of talk radio, and someone asked, what's the Democratic Party? What's their agenda? Now, I will tell you that, what it is. It's Santa Claus socialism. That's what I call it. Santa Claus socialism. Vote for me, fill in the blank, and I'll give you some stuff. That's what they're about. And why do they keep doing it? Because it works. People fall for it. And once they got you dependent, they expect you to vote for them again and again and again. And people fall for this. And who's paying for it? The very people that fall for it are paying for it. Now, some of you are going to say, well, wait a minute. I work hard. Everybody works hard, or most people work hard. The problem is the government takes more and more of your money. And I'm not talking just the federal government. I'm talking all levels. And they will continue doing it until you truly have a political party that first and foremost believes in limited government. And I mean limited government at all levels. But that's the first step. What you really have to find is leaders to run for these offices, people that can support them financially, know how to organize a party, communicate, recruit people to it. There's going to be a critical mass. It doesn't happen, ladies and gentlemen, overnight. It takes years. But you got to start somewhere. And I say start right now. You have friends that are, you know, share your views. You also have some friends that simply don't. They're a lost cause. But everyone has friends that are not common. And if you stand up, start to become active, you can stand up a new political party. And you know who you can trust. I certainly don't know. I'm in Dallas. I'm in a big city. But if you're in rural America or in a small towns, you have a better chance of standing up a new party. Don't expect it to come out of the big cities, because it won't. Sadly to say, it won't. But you know who you can trust. And you need people of integrity that believe in limited government. Some people want this, and that's what you have to understand. Now, what you should also understand, you're not alone. In actuality, in terms of the two parties that are here, you have more people that are independents than either Democrats or Republicans. Now, many of them still lean Democrat or still lean Republican, but they got so mad, aggravated, being lied to, betrayed by both parties that they left. I'm that situation. You know, when I got into politics, I very much got into politics in terms of paying attention to it. Never run for public office. But my first exposure was to Barry Goldwater. Barry Goldwater got soundly defeated by Lyndon Baines Johnson. It was a rout. And ever since then, at that time, the Rockefeller Republicans, liberal Republicans, they've blamed that loss, and they said, never again. We're not going to have a conservative as the candidate for president. Oh, they fought against Ronald Reagan. You better believe they did. They didn't want him either. And I still say Ronald Reagan's biggest mistake is when he appointed George H.W. Bush his running mate. But that's another show. The Republican Party has never, and I mean never, been a conservative party. It's never been for limited government. I was initially what's called a traditional conservative, and then I became more and more an economic or business conservative, believing in balanced budgets, believing in prudence. And then the more I looked at it, I said, what I really am is a classical liberal. Some would say libertarian. And what I saw is a lot of the Republicans, both the ones that were defeated as well as the ones that were won, whether it was the presidency, the Senate, or the House, were liberal, progressive, big spenders. And that includes George H.W. Bush and his son. He was a big spender. And I voted, sad to say, for the Bushes three times. But then in 2006, I said, you know, I'm getting up there in age. In my entire lifetime, there was only one person that I could vote for president that truly was a conservative and libertarian. Doesn't mean he was perfect. Far from it. And that was Ronald Reagan. And ever since, there's not been one Democrat or Republican candidate that I could vote for. I finally threw up my hands and said, you always hear the line, the lesser of two evils. That's the trap me and millions have fallen into. Well, if you vote for Hillary Clinton, you want her? No, I certainly didn't. But I knew what Donald Trump was all about. I knew he was from New York City. I'm originally from New York City. New York City is a Democratic bastion. And their entire families that have been voting Democrat for their entire lives. What did mom and dad do? I'm going to vote that. They don't think about it. It's sort of, and that's what they want. They want you to become dependent on government. They don't want you to think. They don't really care what you think, but they don't want you to think. That wasn't me. I thought about it. So I finally gave up on the Republican Party. And that's been my decision. That was in 2006. I saw these massive deficits, and I said, wait a minute. This is not the Democratic Party in control. It's the Republican Party, and that's exactly what has happened now. Some would say they repeat their mistakes. No, it's not their mistakes. They're doing exactly what they're about. They want bigger and bigger government. Now, they'll try to wrap it up. Well, we're for military spending. We need a strong national defense. Excuse me, who is going to take us on? That's the question that needs to be answered. Who is going to take us on? We spend about half of all the military spending in the world. Who's going to take us on? It doesn't mean we have to make sure our equipment, whether it's tanks, aircraft, ships, you name it, is not up to date. But again, who's going to take us on? They're not many, and they're not that foolish either. The reason why our military is this large is we have very much a globalist interventionist policy where we act like we're policemen of the world. What we really are security guards for the economic interest abroad, and that's primarily petroleum, not entirely. There are other critical resources. petroleum and natural gas. But ladies and gentlemen, the United States has huge supplies, mainly in the last 5, 6, 7 years, of natural gas and petroleum. We're flush. We were importing quite a bit. Now we're starting to export, and that will grow. The American people are tired of seeing their hard-earned money build up a huge military capability. We spent several trillion in the Middle East alone, and they're still killing each other. And they will, because there's a fundamental religious civil war going on between the Sunnis, the Wahhabis, or the Salafists. If you don't know what I'm talking about, look it up. And the Shia. The way to think of it, the Saudis don't like, hate the Shia, and the Shia don't like the Saudis. And the Republic, the Islamic Republic of Iran, is Shia. They want to be the superpower of the Middle East. They have a couple of problems, one being Israel, second being the United States, but also Saudi Arabia. Senator Paul said it very well. We pick sides, and then several years later, we have to change sides. And most of the time, you don't want to be on either side. If they want to kill each other, let them kill each other. We need a political party that believes in the Constitution and says, according to the Constitution, if a president wants to ask Congress for a declaration of war, it should do so. And then let's have a conversation, a debate, prior to intervening in country after country. If we did, I suspect that more than half, if not three quarters, of these interventions abroad would never have happened. And many times they lie about what's going on. And that includes Vietnam. As long as you have the capability, the military capability, and the bias to grow government, we will continue to be the new American empire. And yes, people of the world will fear us. They won't respect us, but they will fear us. Because no matter how many Americans die and are wounded, 10, 20, 30 times more of the local population is killed and wounded. That's what's seldom looked at. We're way past being the ugly Americans, way past that. And we no longer can afford an empire. The reason why all empires fall is they overreach. They overreach their economic resources, and it's largely to try to put up a military establishment that has to continually go into country after country. That is not what we were about, and it shouldn't be what we're about. And until you have a third party that's viable, successful, and gains the support of the American people, it will continue. Keep voting Democrat, Republican. You're going to get the same results, and don't blame me. Blame yourselves. And what these militarists, especially the neocons, they're the warmongers. That's Lindsey Graham and John McCain and a lot of others. There's not a war that they don't want us to fight. Now, I'm against the draft, and I'm not recommending that we bring it back. But one of the consequences of having a draft, especially in the Vietnam era, is it drafted a lot of people that never wanted to go in the military. Now, I volunteered. And so did a lot of other Americans. And we still have Americans that will volunteer. We don't need the draft. That is a mercenary army when you have a draft. And yes, I played Milton Friedman. He was instrumental in finally killing the draft. We still have selective service, but we don't have a draft. But one of the benefits of a draft is it mobilizes students, the people that are not only students, but when your son and daughter are sent away and you're not for it and your son and daughter is not for it and then he either comes home wounded or never comes home, remember 55,000 didn't, you start asking you some questions. Why did we ever intervene? And that was under a Democratic administration, a liberal Democratic administration, both Kennedy and LBJ. And what do we have after that? A Republican progressive Nixon. How do you stop this? I'll tell you how you won't. Continuing to vote Democrat and Republican. Because if you look at the votes, there were 71 senators in the Senate for this budget-busting bill, and there were 240 representatives. And when you look at the A and B Republicans, maybe 100 in both houses, they cannot stop it. when the Democrats and the Republicans get together, their bias is always for bigger and bigger government. Until we have solid majorities, 220 minimum, but I would say 240, that's 240 independents against Democrats and Republicans and 60 or more senators, this will continue. That's why I don't waste time going to the voting booth, because most of the candidates I could never vote for. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to reactivate the Tea Party movement across this country. I'm a small voice in the wilderness, talking to what I call the remnant, the few people that listen, that are interested in ideas. They're a small group of people. But if they can get mobilized, there are many more people that agree with them. But it's going to take a concerted effort by you, me, your friends, like-minded people. And it's not going to happen overnight. And don't fall for the idea that if only we elect fill-in-the-blank president, happy days are here again. No, it's not. Donald Trump, like I said, is a New York City liberal from a very much city that is a liberal democratic bastion and now has become a progressive socialist communist bastion. What do you think he's for? He's for big government. Now, there's some things I agree with what he's doing, but many things I totally oppose, and this is one of them. And I understand next week we're going to hear more on his infrastructure bill. Now, I know, I live in Dallas, that there are roads, streets that need to be improved. Dallas is relatively good on that. So is Texas. But in my mind, that's where improvements in infrastructure, new roads, new bridges, new airports, whatever you need, it's up to the people there to decide what is in their best interest, not the federal government. You see, I truly do believe in federalism. I want the federal government to stay out of it because they invariably screw it up. They're not very good at it. And then you get corruption and payoffs. It's not what you know, it's who you know, and whether or not you've made campaign contributions. That invites corruption. That invites the exact system that we have today. And we've had it for many, many decades. Donald Trump is going to tell us about what he wants in terms of infrastructure. And I'd be the first to say there are some projects that it's legitimate, not many, but some, for the federal government to get involved with. But most of them are not. And don't get in, fall for the trap. And if you hear the word, start running and checking your wallet. We need public-private partnerships. No, what we need is the federal government to mind its own business, leave us alone. We in Dallas County, Texas, if we need a new road, new bridge, new airport, we'll propose it to the people, let them vote on the bond issue, stay out. But that's not what President Trump is about. He wants to expand dramatically infrastructure spending. Now, I'm well aware, and you'll get varying estimates, that anywhere from $3,000 billion to $5,000 billion of infrastructure should be happening, and it's not. Well, if you're in a city that's full of potholes and the streets are not being repaired, don't call Washington. Don't call your state capital. Call your city council and ask them, why aren't you doing anything about it? And be prepared to pay for it. Have that bond issue and have the people decide what they want. Keep Washington out of it. If you're in Texas, keep Austin out of it. You see, the people closest to the problem should focus on the problem, including the financial resources it takes to fix the problem. In Texas, we have experience with these toll roads that are money-making propositions for the corporations running it. I understand, and that's what our former governor was big on, but many people in the state were not. They were willing to pay the bond issue, and when the bonds are paid off, the toll booths go off it, and the road is paid for. I know you have maintenance. What they're sick of is more and more toll roads. The answer is let the locals, you and me, wherever you are, decide whether or not you want to spend your money for a brand new highway, a brand new bridge, road, airport, school, whatever the infrastructure is. Let the people decide. You see, I believe it's up to the people to decide how to spend their own money, and they will spend their own money best. Washington does not know how to do that because they're spending other people's money, and they don't do a good job of it. It's a dangerous precedent. But am I surprised that Donald Trump is pushing it? No, he's from New York City. How many times has New York City faced bankruptcy? Several. And it's time for the federal government not to bail them out. I mean, if California wants to waste a lot of money building a rail system nowhere, let the people of California pay for it and pay the price. No subsidies from the federal government. And really limited subsidies from the state. It's the locals, you and me in our communities, that are in the best position to decide where is the best place to spend our money. Have faith in the people. Now, I say that and people start laughing. I understand that. What the politicians are doing is not listening. They're disconnected. They're not listening. They don't care about your concerns. They're about power and getting reelected. And to get reelected, they need money. So who do they listen to? Those that give them the most money. That's what's going on. That's why the votes were so lopsided. I remember when I was in the Air Force, my boss was a full colonel. He took me on a trip because I was the guy that knew the details. I was the financial manager. But we were talking to a fairly high-level person in this company. And he was telling the story, we know exactly what's happening in Washington and how the votes are going to happen. And this was years ago. I'm dating myself. Years ago. And I believed him. I had no doubts about it. They knew, I won't say they had the best vote count, but they knew who was supporting him and who was against him and what did it take to make sure that their company and the program, in this case the F-15 they were building, and other fighters, was taken care of. Does that mean they always won? No, sir. They had their lobbyist, and they paid them well to make sure that the votes went a certain way, and they largely did. And they were probably better informed than the Air Force was, or DOD. That goes on all the time. That's not unique. That's what I expect, and that's what goes on. And that means to make that happen, you better believe they're making the appropriate campaign contributions to the senator or the representatives that votes in favor of bills that they want passed. I'm not opposed to that, but you need to be aware of that. This doesn't happen by accident. Oh, the military are happy today, and I'm happy for them. But when are we going to bring our troops home? From Germany, Japan, South Korea, Afghanistan, and from the Middle East. When? Are you getting the impression? Never? The 12th of never? Well, if we keep spending more and more money on the military, that means we have less to spend on what needs to happen in the United States. And that includes roads, bridges, airports, ports, you name it. When you keep spending trillions of dollars, it adds up. And then remember the long-term cost. Many people that volunteer make a career of it. I decided not to. But after 20 years or 25 years, they get a decent retirement. I don't begrudge them, but you got to pay for that. Wars continue to impact this budget because why the national debt is approaching $21 trillion, what you need to understand, that is the tip of the iceberg. The big, what's under the iceberg, unfunded obligations, also called unfunded liabilities. The big four are Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and government pensions. Unfunded means they don't have the money. So when these obligations come due, when the bill comes due, what do you think they have to do? They have to tax you or cut the pensions or cut the benefits. And what is the range of estimates? Anywhere from $100 trillion, that's five times the national debt, to $200 trillion, which is 10 times. Yeah, there's a broad range, but it's somewhere there. That's why we're fast approaching a day of reckoning where the debt bomb goes off. You see, many of these generals many of these secretaries in the cabinet, many of these bureaucrats, and many of the supporters of each party don't seem to get in their head that we're in financial trouble. Because if they truly understood it, they would never have passed this bill. And where was President Trump? Cheering him on. He's a big spender. Is he going to save you? No, he's not. Oh, he's made very, very clear. I'm not going to touch entitlements. I'm not going to touch Social Security or Medicare. Politically, for the short run, that's a very smart move. And yes, in the long run, we're all dead. But what's happening? That day of reckoning is coming right towards us at a very fast rate. So mark the calendar. This is the day that the Republican Party made it very clear to many, many people that they're just as bad as the Democratic Party, if not worse. The only difference between the two, one wants to spend it on military spending, the other wants to spend it on welfare and maybe entitlements. Now, I just got the signal. I got to wrap it up. The two other stories, let me hit them. One is there's a breaking news story that the New York Times broke that our CIA was approached by a Russian, I think a con man, that did have contacts, though, with Russian intelligence as well as the Russian crime organization. And he offered to sell, initially, the National Security Agency, together with the Central Intelligence Agency, had software tools that were used to break in, hack other systems, and make it appear like either the Russians or the Chinese broke in. And they're trying to get it back. They're in panic mode. Initially, he said, for $10 million, I'll give you the tools. He quickly dropped his price to $1 million. The CIA paid him $100,000, but he didn't deliver the goods. But he supposedly had a video of Donald Trump being compromised. Ladies and gentlemen, the Russians have been interfering in the United States politics for decades. And the Central Intelligence Agency has been intervening in country after country to influence elections. It's nothing new. Our intelligence agencies around the world, that's what they do. I've never seen any proof, and I'm open-minded because I didn't vote for Donald Trump. If they got the proof on him, deliver it. We're being played. We're being manipulated by the Russians. And the Democratic Party is using this to divide the country. Now, the second story that I don't have time, but I will get into. We're in what I call memo madness. But let me cut to the chase. The Obama administration, together with the Clintons, were conspiring to make sure that Obama's legacy continued. And they crossed a line. They were using the intelligence community, the FBI, the National Security Agency, and the CIA to spy on Donald Trump and the Republican Party. That is crossing a very bright red line. That is exactly what happens in police states. They use government assets, in this case the NSA, the FBI, the CIA, to spy on their opposition, and the next step is to crush dissent. They never thought they were going to be caught, and they have been caught. What remains to be seen is whether or not Attorney General Jeff Sessions and the President of the United States make sure that they go after the people that are, what they did is criminal. We're talking the President on down, the leadership of the Department of Justice, Attorney General Lynch, the former head of the FBI, and the people under him. That is a scandal that's many orders of magnitude greater than Watergate. And this scandal is just breaking. It's been breaking for several months. I knew about it because I go out and find the information. You can't rely on big lie media, the television networks, and your newspapers, the few that still remain in large cities. In March, we're going to have the Inspector General of the Department of Justice report. We've already had releases, probably more than half a dozen. We're going to learn some of the glory details. And the Democratic Party is in panic mode because when the American people learn what President Obama and his administration did spying on the American people, Donald Trump and people associated with him. They're not going to sit still for that, because that's invading your privacy and my privacy. It's fundamentally destroying your Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable search and seizures. They need a warrant. So more and more details will come out, and we'll learn them in the next 30 to 60 days. And when I have more time, I'll go over all the details. But we're learning what has been happening. And that's a sad day for many of the loyal, principled, want-to-do-the-right-thing people that work for both the FBI and the Department of Justice. They deserve much better leadership. Unfortunately, it was corrupted, and they thought they could get away with it because they firmly believed that Hillary Clinton was going to win, and they made sure she got off. Thank you for listening, and now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. And KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.